Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, December 11, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. I'm very excited going back to Las Vegas. It's been a long time since I've been to Las Vegas. 5 months to be exact. Usually we go in October, but the October pay-per-view went to Australia. So it's been quite the stretch. And Vegas to me is kind of like a second home. I've been there at this point maybe 45 times for all the events. It feels very comfortable there and it always feels like a big deal. And UFC 245 is a big deal. In fact, it is the final pay-per-view of the decade. The final UFC pay-per-view of the decade. Isn't that crazy? Think of this. This decade started January 1st, 2010. It started with these UFC champions holding titles. Lightweight, BJ Penn. Welterweight, George St. Pierre. Middleweight, Anderson Silva. Light heavyweight, Lyoto Machida. Heavyweight, Brock Lesnar. That's it. There were no other champions. Isn't that crazy? Think about how much has changed over the past 10 years. And we will be talking more about that in the coming weeks. But I just think that's crazy to think about as we approach Saturday night. Friday's a huge night for us. Second Helwani Roadshow. Tickets on sale. Go to Ticketmaster right now. Type in my name. Go to the pin tweet on my Twitter. Go to my bio on Instagram. You can still get tickets. We've got the Nose World Order belt on the line. The trivia challenge, if you will. Helwani on J-Check, Michael Chiesa, Derek Lewis, and Dominic Reyes going head-to-head for the honor of winning that title. Stipe won it back in June. I can't wait for the one on Friday, December 13th at the Link Promenade, the Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club, to be exact, at the Link Promenade. And there's audience participation. So you can help out the fighters, meet and greet afterwards, Q&A, prizes, all that stuff and more. So I'm very excited. And of course, 245 is absolutely stacked. Later on in the program, we're going to talk to our pal, Mark Raimondi, about the title fights, about the main event, about some news and notes. So stay tuned for that. He's already in Las Vegas, by the way. I'm in New York. I'm leaving very early tomorrow morning. In the middle portion of the show, we're actually going to be talking to Mick Conlon, undefeated boxer from Northern Ireland, and he's a friend of the program. I talked to him before Maymac. He has a huge fight coming up this Saturday with a great backstory. I'll tell you about that later in the show, but I'm looking forward to that. We had Terrence Crawford on Monday's show. Now we get to talk to Mick Conlon, who I'm a big fan of, and I love the backstory going into this fight. So we'll talk to him about that. It's a huge night for combat sports, but Saturday is 245, and one team in particular is under the spotlight, if you will. They are one of the most dominant and successful teams in the history of mixed martial arts. American Top Team, South Florida, and of course there's a million American Top Teams all over the world. But the first one and the HQ, if you will, is in Coconut Creek, Florida. And the founder and owner of said gym is the great Dan Lambert, who is one of the most important figures in the history of this sport. You may not know this, but he is one of the most important figures in the history of this sport, and he has a very big night on Saturday because Amanda Nunes, who fights out of ATT, is defending her women's 135-pound title against Jermaine Durandamy, and in the main event, it's Colby Covington trying to become the welterweight champion against Kamaru Usman. So I thought it would be fun to check in with Dan Lambert and talk to him about the state of the gym and also those two title fights. So without further ado, let us say hello to the biggest pro wrestling fan in mixed martial arts, Mr. Dan Lambert. Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Ariel. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. I remember not that long ago, ATT didn't have a single UFC champion. You finally got your first one with Robbie Lawler back at UFC 181, I believe it was. And now here you are. It's old hat. You walk into a show like this with, you know, one champion, a double champion, and then another one trying to get the belt. Does it still feel special when you have these nights, or at this point are you just kind of used to all the success?
Oh, no, it never gets old.
Never gets old, huh? You remember those days when you guys were still striving for that first belt?
Those days? You mean those years and years and years and years and years? Yeah, I remember them well.
Okay, so let me ask you first about Amanda. She, in my opinion, is the greatest female fighter of all time. And I don't think a lot of people saw this coming. Like the beginning of the decade, she started out, you know, 3-3. She won that fight against Julia Budd, but, you know, entered Strikeforce and then the UFC, and she was, you know, maybe kind of figuring things out. She comes to ATT, and over the past few years, she has become an unbeatable force. What has changed for her? How did she turn into this, based on what you've seen from her in the gym?
I think it's a combination of things. You know, obviously a percentage of those things are physical and, you know, getting in better shape, getting the better at her craft and improving her striking, her jiu-jitsu, et cetera. But, you know, like Yogi Berra said, you know, 90% of this game is half mental. And I believe a lot of it has to do with her mental state. You know, once you took the athletic gifts she had and you added the confidence that she did not have in the past to the mix, you could just see her grow.
We may have lost Dan there. Did we lose Dan?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I lost you there for a second, but you were talking about the mental side of things for Amanda. Is there a certain way that you guys turn things around for her mentally? Did you get her involved with a coach? Did she go see someone? Or is it just about like reps and just getting her better as a fighter, and that breeds confidence?
I think a lot of that credit goes to Conan. You know, Conan and Amanda bonded right after she got to the gym. She came to our gym after the loss to Kat Zingano, and she was kind of down on herself. And at one point, she was just considering coming in as a training partner to help Nina and not fighting anymore herself. And I think anybody who had seen her fight in the past knew that she obviously had the physical gifts and some tools that could get her to some pretty good heights in the sport. Conan pretty quickly realized that she was just lacking some confidence and she needed to be molded. And the mental game is really important in this business. And he started working with her and bringing her along slowly. And as she felt the extra attention in the gym and started having success in the gym against, you know, good fighters and high-level training partners, you know, she then walked into her next fight and won that fight and got more confident, then won her next fight and got more confident, won her next fight and got more confident. You know, a lot of the knock on Amanda in the past was, you know, people thought she had cardio issues and wore down in fights. And, you know, a lot of people have cardio issues, and they're not just physical. You know, a lot of cardio issues are mental. And once she started building that confidence, she just became a beast.
Yeah, she hasn't lost since that fight. I didn't know that story about her just thinking about being a training partner for Nina, her longtime partner and now fiance. That's amazing. So you have Amanda doing her thing. Do you agree, by the way, that she's the greatest female fighter of all time? I know you're obviously biased, but is that a fair statement on my part?
Man, I don't even think there's a debate on that. I think the only question is where she stands in the greatest of all time, pound for pound, and male or female.
Yep. And she's starting to say that she should be considered one of the greatest as far as male or female is concerned. But then, of course, you have Colby in the main event, and this has been a great year for ATT with, you know, the resurgence, the resurrection, if you will, of Jorge Masvidal. I know you've been with him for so long. And let's just, you know, address the elephant in the room. They are not friends. Things are a little tense between them. How can you describe to us the mood at the gym as Masvidal is doing his thing, but Colby's also doing his thing, and it seems like the tension between these two friends and former roommates is growing as well?
Well, I mean, there's certainly tension between those two guys, but, you know, and they're two obviously well-known fighters who get a lot of attention. But, you know, keep it in perspective. We have 100 pro fighters at training at our gym at any given time, and they're certainly not the only two guys in the gym that are high-level fighters or UFC athletes or Bellator athletes or Ryzen or ONE FC or every other promotion there is around. So, you know, I don't ever expect that everybody in our gym is going to get along. You know, 100 fighters is a lot of alphas and a lot of egos in the gym. And I'm not looking for everybody to hold hands and sing Kumbaya every day together, which I'd like it. You know, if I had my druthers, that would be the case, but it's just not realistic. But, you know, both those guys respect our gym and understand that that's a place of doing business and the team comes first and foremost. And if they have a problem with each other, I don't care. I mean, if they want to be stupid and take that problem in the street somewhere at a restaurant or a gas station, you know, somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. The winner's probably going to go to jail and the loser's going to get beat up. And that doesn't really benefit anybody. But they both know that they'd both be losers if it happened inside the gym. They know better. They respect the gym. They're not going to do that to the gym. I've sat both guys down and talked about it, and they come to the gym, and, you know, they're not training together. They're not saying hello. They're not greeting each other, but they're not running to the gym and tearing into each other or looking to fight in our gym, because that's just not what our gym's about.
When you sat them down, were they receptive to the idea of, you know, keeping it civil, or was this tense? Were you having to almost convince them to not do anything stupid in the gym?
Well, I think George takes a lot more personally than Colby does. Colby was all about business, and when I sat down with Colby and talked about it, he was very receptive, saying, "Yeah, I'm here to work. I'm here to do what I need to do, and get better, and win championships, and make money." So it was an easy pitch with Colby. George was not as quite of an easy pitch, you know. And George told me, "Hey, man, I'm telling you right now. Next time I see Colby in the gym, this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. That's just the way I am, and that's the way I'm wired. And there's nothing you can do to stop it." And I said, "No, George, that's not what's going to happen. You know, it's absolutely not what's going to happen." He's like, "Oh, really? Why not?" I said, "Because you respect our gym too much, and you wouldn't do that to the team." And he looked at me, and he's like, "Fuck." And he's like, "You got me." He's like, "Yeah, you got me." So, you know, it's not because George doesn't want to do something. You know, that's just, you know, how George is. I mean, ask Leon Edwards, you know, how George is about stuff like that. But you know, the fact of the matter is you know, there's more about American Top Team than one fighter or two fighters. And I think they both respect that.
Has anything happened by accident? You weren't around. They were in the locker room. Like, has anything since this essentially blew up when they had that little, you know, altercation, if you will, at 241 where they were seen arguing at the event? Has anything happened at the gym between them where you got worried that it would get ugly?
No, we have a large staff of coaches at our gym, and we sit down one day a week for about an hour or more if necessary, and we go over issues at the gym. You know, deal with problems, ways to get better. And, you know, when that started brewing, one of the issues that came up was, "Hey, you know, we've got this issue brewing. What are we going to do about it?" And we got real smart about communicating and knowing when both guys would be in the gym at the same time and how we wanted to set it up. We have a large gym with a lot of training partners, and it's not that difficult to keep guys apart from each other at the gym, especially if you're aware of it. And, you know, everybody's on alert just to make sure. And we've had no issues.
Is this the first time that you've had to go to this extent to keep guys separate, or has it happened in the past and we just didn't find out about it?
Well, like I said, we got 100 guys, a lot of egos, a lot of alphas. We've had in the past where two guys didn't like each other. It certainly did not get this much public attention. And sometimes when it gets that much public attention, there might be even that much more pressure on somebody to do something about it. It's one thing if someone says something about you and pisses you off, and nobody knows about it. It's another thing if somebody says something about you and it pisses you off and it's being retweeted a million times and everybody's talking about it and asking you what you're going to do about it. So this is certainly a heightened security level, so to speak, but not the first time it's happened.
You've put in so much time and effort to build the American Top Team brand and the gym and to turn it into a powerhouse in the sport and so very respected. When you see this develop, when you see Poirier say what he says about, you know, it's on site the next time I see you, when you see or hear Joanna say that she's rooting against a teammate, if you will, does that hurt you? Like, do you take that personally? This is not what you want, right? You don't want to see teammates rooting against each other and this type of stuff spilling into the public. How do you deal with all of that?
Obviously not what I want, but I mean, come on, it's human nature. It just is. I mean, you're at ESPN right now. I doubt you love everybody that works at ESPN. Maybe you haven't been there long enough to get pissed off by some people or not. I mean, everybody's got issues and people they like and people they don't like. Maybe in the fight business, you know, it gets exaggerated a little bit because, you know, you're a professional fighter and your first inclination when someone pisses you off might be to do something that might not be an office clerk's first inclination, but it's just part of life. Fucking deal with it. And no, I mean, I don't get bent out of shape over it, lose sleep overnight. I don't like it, but I expect it. I understand it. It's human nature. It happens to everybody. We're not special in this regard, so we'll deal with it.
Mark Raimondi of ESPN has a big profile out today on Colby, and it touches on a lot of this stuff, and you're quoted in the article as well. One thing I wanted to ask you about was Colby tells him in the story that he is actually a little uncomfortable at the gym. He feels like he has to look over his shoulder. Has he ever expressed that to you?
Well, I mean, I think Colby's going to be uncomfortable anywhere he goes, fight-related. I mean, that's part of his shtick. You think Colby stays at the regular fighter hotel when he goes to a show? You think Colby walks into a UFC arena and walks to the back and doesn't look over his shoulder? And it just doesn't have to be about somebody that he might be fighting that night or somebody that he's, you know, in a little bit of a heated exchange with. I mean, what better way for some fighter Colby doesn't even know exists to get himself over to the masses than to go up and beat up Colby Covington and be the hero to the to the masses and shut that guy up once and for all. So I think Colby's always going to have to be on guard no matter where he goes, just because of the nature of the path he chose to get himself over. And I'm not criticizing that path. I mean, look where it's gotten him. And I think in large part it's due to, you know, the way he's promoted himself. So that's the choice he made, and that's part of that, one of the things that goes with the choice. But no, I certainly don't think, I think Colby's safer at our gym than he is anywhere else in the world.
Use the term, you know, get himself over. It's a pro wrestling term, and I joked at the beginning that you're one of the biggest pro wrestling fans in the sport of MMA. Fans may know, they may recall when we spoke a couple years ago about your extensive pro wrestling belt collection. It's unbelievable. I'm very envious of it. And so I'm wondering, because of your love of pro wrestling, did you actually help Colby craft this persona? Were you at all involved in him? You know, for the longest time, he was just sort of a vanilla wrestler from Oregon that, you know, was good but didn't really have much edge or gimmick. And now he is who he is. We all know who he is. I don't have to explain it. Did you play a part in any of that?
Just what's been reported elsewhere about the origins of his personality change. I mean, it's not a secret. You know, you go back to his fight in Singapore with Stun Gun, that was like a 30-26 one-way traffic fight and did not get over with the fans. And he was kind of booed out of the building after winning. And Sean Shelby grabbed me in the locker room and said, hey, he's got one fight left on his contract, and that's it. I'm not re-signing him. People don't like him. He's boring, and he's beaten up a lot of the guys that I think I can get over, you know, but he's kind of, he's not a gatekeeper. He's stopping these guys from succeeding. So he's not really doing me any good. And, you know, I asked Sean if his last fight on his contract would be Maya in Brazil. And I told Colby what Sean said and said, I think you need to change something between now and then. And that something's obviously not going to be your fighting style, because you can only improve so much between from one fight to another. So you might want to change something else. And I kind of left the rest of it to him, and I guess he ran with it. No, I don't think I'm responsible for it, but I think I planted a seed.
Well, it was brilliant, and it has worked out. You are also very good friends with Matt Hughes, and Colby made what some would say a very insensitive remark about Matt Hughes after his win over Robbie Lawler. How did you feel about that?
Matt Hughes came down and spent Thanksgiving with me, and I probably said 10 things worse to him over dinner than Colby said about him and after that fight, and Matt returned fire on me really quickly. So if you think you're going to rub Matt Hughes the wrong way or bother him with words, you got another thing coming. You don't know Matt Hughes. There is it's bounced off him like water off a duck.
Okay. You are also close with Dana White. You have a long history with Dana White. In fact, you almost bought the UFC almost 20 years ago. It seems like him and Dana don't see eye to eye, and he has taken shots at Dana. Does that make you feel uncomfortable at all?
No, it really doesn't. I mean, like I said, just like I'd like all the fighters at the gym to get along, but I know it's human nature and they're not going to. I'd like all my fighters to, you know, get along great with the UFC brass. But, I mean, Dana is a strong personality himself, and Dana's got really thick skin. And, you know, Dana's going to have some feuds with people from time to time, and it's just part of the nature of the business. And, you know, I see them go back and forth a little bit. You know, if it increases fan interest, I guess it's not the worst thing in the world. If it sells any tickets, it's not the worst thing in the world. If it ended up with Colby getting fired, you know, it'd be a really bad thing. And then I'd be worried about it. But I mean, Colby's a big boy. Dana's obviously a big boy. They can handle themselves. Not a big concern of mine.
Are you at all concerned if he loses this fight because of that back and forth with Dana that he actually may get released? Is that at all a thought in your mind?
I don't think I've ever seen Dana release someone just out of not liking him, somebody that can draw money and get fans' interest. And, you know, like Colby or hate Colby, I think people want to see Colby. So, yeah, I would be absolutely stunned if he ever got released due to his relationship with the UFC. I think the only way he's ever going to get released is if he goes on a big losing streak and doesn't do the company any good anymore.
Are you at all shocked, Dan, that people get so emotional about the things that he says? Like, to me, he's playing pro wrestler. It feels a lot like Sergeant Slaughter back in 1991 when he turned against the U.S. and sided with Saddam Hussein. This is completely different. But, like, he's playing a character, and he's often said this in interviews, that I'm just playing a character. But yet people get so mad. Does this surprise you?
I mean, I grew up being those people that were pissed off and wanted to kill pro wrestlers and were afraid other pro wrestlers were going to show up at my house and beat me up if I booed them. And no, it doesn't surprise me. I lived my whole life in that. growing up in that world. I love the entertainment side of the business. You know, I know people like to, some people think you're either a fight purist or you're not. And if you like any of the entertainment value or the talk or the smack talk or what, that you're not a real fight fan. And I disagree. I mean, I like fights as much as anybody likes fights. But, you know, when there's a little extra intrigue involved in a fight, I think it adds to it. You know, I was actually sitting next to a well-known female fighter at our gym during the press conference for the show in New York. And she mentioned to me when they were bringing the fighters out for the weigh-in, for the face-offs, that, man, she's like, man, this is a joke. Amanda should be the main event. She's the greatest female fighter of all time, if not the greatest fighter of all time. And for her not to be on top, that's kind of disrespectful. I think that's bullshit. And, you know, Amanda and Jermaine came off and faced off, and everybody showed Amanda the respect that she deserves and Jermaine the respect she deserves. And, you know, Volkanovski and Max came out, and, you know, they got their pop. And, I mean, Max is, you know, he's one of the greatest fighters of all time in his own right. And Volkanovski's, well, what an up-and-comer he is. And they got their respect. But, man, when Colby and Usman came out, the place went absolutely freaking bonkers, and the heat was crazy, and everybody was standing and yelling and screaming. And I looked at her and said, you think maybe the UFC knows what they're doing?
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, I'll shut up now. Yeah. I mean, people are into that, and I'm not surprised. I think it just adds a lot to a fight when it's a little personal.
Now he's selling this fight. In my opinion, he's the challenger, but he's also the A-side as far as who everyone wants to see compete on Saturday. And a lot of people want to see him lose, but he doesn't really care as long as they pay. By the way, as we are speaking right this second, I did not plan this, Dustin Poirier is going on like a tweet rant about Colby Covington and said, and I quote, to Colby, keep your wrestling sharp. I'll be back to the gym in January. You will need it. So the fun never stops at ATT. And I didn't plan this, I promise, but I just wanted to let you know in full disclosure.
That does not surprise me at all about Dustin. Dustin is not a guy who likes to play around. You know, there's no doubt about that. I'm going to have to sit down and have a talk with Dustin before he starts training. I've been almost fortunate that, you know, the timing of it, you know, was after Dustin's fight, and then he had a surgery and he hasn't been back yet. And I'm going to have to sit down and talk with him before he gets to the gym and go over how we're going to handle this. But we'll handle it. We're big boys.
Appreciate the time very much, Dan. And congratulations on not only a great year, but everything that you've done with the gym. It's amazing to watch. And the story of Jorge Masvidal has been the story of the year, probably the fighter of the year when it's all said and done, knockout of the year. I know he's one of the OGs, if you will, of ATT. He's been there for so long. I'm sure that made you very proud and has been a really great thing to watch and witness over the past few months. So congratulations.
I would say that seeing what George has done over the last year and the he called it a resurgence, to see him go from where he was to where he is after all this time and all the ups and downs is probably the coolest thing I've ever experienced in my life, MMA related.
Wow. And that's saying a lot. You've seen a lot. That's amazing. Well, good luck this weekend. It's setting up to be perhaps another very special one for the team, and I'm sure you'll be there and nervous beforehand, but for your sake, I hope it plays out the way you want it to. All the best. Thank you for doing this, Dan.
Sure thing. Thank you. Take care.
All right, there he is, Dan Lambert, the original owner, founder of American Top Team. They are home to some of the biggest names in the history of this sport. Of course, Jorge Masvidal, as I mentioned, Colby Covington, Amanda Nunes, some of the biggest names. Mike Brown has emerged as one of the top coaches in the sport. Kayla Harrison has a big event, December 31st, New York City. They've had some of the biggest names come through, Tyron Woodley and Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Junior Dos Santos. The list goes on and on. It's a big one this weekend at UFC 245, and later in the show, we will talk to Mark Raimondi about that big card and his trip to Florida with one Colby Covington. Before we get to our next guest, let me quickly tell you about our good friends over at Whoop. You know Whoop. I've been talking about them. I like them very much. We're all looking for ways to improve our health, whether it's being smarter about how we train, making a better effort to get more sleep, or simply thinking more about our body's overall wellness. Well, today's sponsor, Whoop, is a fitness tracker that goes beyond counting steps and provides 24/7 fitness, sleep, and recovery insights personalized to you. There's nothing else like it on the market. Our lives cause different levels of stress on our body, from training to work and our lives at home. Whoop understands that and quantifies it for you into actionable metrics. Whoop automatically tracks workouts so you can focus on your training. With Whoop, you'll get a daily recovery score that looks at biometrics like heart rate variability, resting heart rate, and your sleep performance to let you know how ready your body is to perform. You're also given insight into the intensity of your training in real time and track how strenuous your day is, as well as get next level sleep insight with suggested sleep times based on how strenuous your day is. Track your sleep stages and cycles and see how much sleep you get compared to how much you needed. Whether you're looking into being a smarter athlete, just worrying about your fitness, trying to get healthier, get better with your sleep, or just be more mindful of your body's recovery, Whoop has you covered. Don't wait for New Year's resolutions to start being more in tune with your body. If you're looking to be smarter about how you train, sleep, or recover, Whoop is offering our audience 15% off with my code Ariel, A-R-I-E-L. Go to whoop.com, that's W-H-O-O-P.com, and use the code Ariel at checkout and optimize your performance with Whoop. Now, let's move along to our next guest. Let's go back before we say hello to him. Rio Olympic Games, August 2016, perhaps the defining moment of those games. Michael Conlon speaking to the Irish media after his controversial loss in the Olympic Games. Everyone heard it, but in case you have not heard it, this is what he said.
Michael, you have a lot to get off your chest after that.
Yeah, you burnt teeth. Your fucking teeth. Some of that, that's me. I never boxed for Aiba again. They're cheating bastards, they're paying everybody. And no, I don't give a fuck. I'm cursing on TV and retaining this here. That's here to win Olympic gold. My dream's been shattered now. But you know what? I have a big career ahead of me. And these ones, they're known for being cheats. And they'll always be cheats. Amateur boxing stinks from the core right to the top.
That audio courtesy of RTE Sport back on August 16th, 2016. I'm sure that you have heard that before, seen it before. Again, it was one of the defining moments of the Summer Olympic Games in Rio. That was Mick Conlon after his very controversial loss to Vladimir Nikitin. And in fact, that was actually his second loss to him. At the Olympics, he lost 2-1. He also lost an amateur fight to him around 6 years ago. So he gets a third crack at the Russian on Saturday at Madison Square Garden, top ranked card on ESPN. We spoke to Terrence Crawford about this card on Monday, and it's a great one. It's going on at the same time as the 245 card, but honestly, you should be watching this one as well. You got Terrence Crawford, you've got Conlon on the card in this fascinating rematch. You've got Teofimo Lopez. There's a lot to like there, but I'm especially interested in this Conlon fight and the backstory. And you'll recall back in 2017, we actually had Conlon on the program prior to Mayweather-McGregor. He, of course, is the pride of Northern Ireland and had Conor McGregor walk him out to the ring prior to his pro debut in March of 2017. So I thought it would be fun to talk to him prior to this fight on this year's program. Mick, how are you?
Ariel, I'm good, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it. You know, in the build-up to this fight, you have had to relive that moment in your life, that very frustrating and controversial moment. Has that been a nuisance? Has that been something that you have dreaded throughout this process? Because I'm sure every interview that you're doing is talking about what happened in that fight and the reaction afterwards.
No, you know what? It's been repetitive. I've heard it enough now. And now, you know, the Saturday night is just, you know, 3 days away. It's great because it can be put at the bed and get rid of the conversation. Yeah, it's been quite annoying hearing it all the time and having to kind of go back through it and talk about it, because I know what happened and I know the real result, but, you know, it's now my time to kind of put everything else to bed.
Is a part of you looking at this fight as a way to close that wound, close that chapter? Great, you could get by him as a pro and hopefully never have to answer these questions ever again. Is that the great appeal? Because you're a lot further along in your career. You're 12-0 as a pro. He's 3-0 as a pro. So, I mean, you've done a lot better than he has and have been more active, but do you almost need to do this in order to get by that chapter in your life?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, it's good. Every time anybody wants to get a picture of me, they want to flip the bird and, you know, get a picture with the fingers up. So, you know, it'll be good, and that'll probably continue even after this, but it'll be good for the meaning of that to be kind of put to bed and put to rest and kind of move on with my career. I know that, you know, I believe after this, I'm ranked number one in some of the sanctioned bodies, and I'm ready for a title in the next 12 months. So, you know, the fact that I can get this put to bed and move on, it'll be the real kind of restart to what has already been a very interesting and fascinating career for myself.
When you signed with Top Rank around 3 years ago, did you tell them that at some point you want them to make this fight, that this was very important to you?
Yeah, that was the reason. That was the reason I told them to go and make sure they get Vladimir Nikitin. You know, we wanted to make sure this fight would happen at some stage. I want to put the nails in the coffin and, you know, show that what I did to him in Rio wasn't no fluke. It was what it was. I destroyed him, and they'll do it again on Saturday. And, you know, that was one of the things I said before I even said the Top Rank. We need to make sure this kind of happens. And I thought he probably would have, you know, been a bit further on in his career because he's been injured. He stopped start with injuries after fights, cuts and stuff. And then he was injured for our bout, which was scheduled in August. But I knew ESPN wanted to kind of do it. Top Rank wanted to do it. And I actually put it to bed after I pulled it in August. I didn't, there was no point to be doing it. I was kind of past it. I was happy with what it was. I made peace with it. But when ESPN came and said they could do it, ESPN and Top Rank came and said they could do it in December, that I want to have it. And I said, well, sure, if you can do it, let's do it.
Did you afterwards ever investigate what happened there, like how truly corrupt those judges were? Did you ever look into that or actually appeal the decision?
Yeah, well, listen, there's been an awful lot that has happened since and an awful lot of information which has been given since on what happened. You know, just now that the 36 judges, referees and judges who worked in Rio have been banned from the 2020 games next year in Tokyo. We also were told, well, the team were told before my bout happened. I wasn't told anything. They kept everything away from me. But the whole team, my family, everybody knew that we weren't going to get the decision before the fight. They were told by a Russian coach, the Georgian coach, the Irish coach, the Georgian. He's friends with the Russian coach, and he told them to go get help. You're not going to win. So the decision was already made before we had even stepped in the ring.
Okay, and do you feel as though things are better as far as the amateur scene is concerned? Are you even concerned with? I know you spoke. You're one of the very few people who was courageous enough to speak out about this literally seconds after the fight. A lot of people don't do that. Do you feel like it's gotten better? And are you keeping tabs on whether or not it's getting better?
Yeah, well, my father is one of the main coaches for the team that comes to the Olympics. So obviously I keep an eye on it. And yeah, I think it's in an awful lot better place. The governing body, AIBA, who run Olympic boxing, have now, you know, kick out of the Olympics, and the Olympics themselves will work their own boxing. So, you know, that's a good thing for the fights coming through. I think the effects of what I've done will go on into this Olympics and hopefully more, but definitely this one will be the immediate effects of, you know, calling out the corruption. I think you'll see a more cleaner games and more games where a lot more people are going to get the right decisions instead of the wrong decisions. And at the same time, you know, you see, there's a lot of Russian help. The Russians have been kicked into them at the same time, so maybe they'll be even a little bit more fair with that happening.
Yeah. How big of a deal is this fight back home in Ireland and Northern Ireland? How much attention is it receiving?
Yeah, it's huge for back home. You know, every Irish person has resonated with, you know, what happened in the games to me, especially the fact that, you know, I was their only hope in the boxing kind of circle for a medal because it was the last Irish fighter. The fact that it was kind of stolen from us, there's a lot of people feeling injustice. So the fact that I'm able to go out there and right or wrong for the country, I think it's very important, and there's a lot of anticipation for Saturday night.
Of course, I'd be remiss, Mick, if I don't ask you about Conor McGregor. Can I ask what you make of what's become of him? And is it accurate that the Irish people have turned on him, that he's not as well liked as he once was?
You could say that just because of a lot of the bad media going around, but you don't know how much of it's true or how much of it's fake. And you know, there's a lot of gossip going around too. Yeah, he's made some bad decisions. Obviously, you know, the things which has happened and have been in the media. But you know, that's the make of a man is how he comes back from those things and how he rebuilds himself. And you know, someone like Conor McGregor, who's, you know, came up from nothing, you know, reached the highest of hate in sport and entertainment, and the fact that he just had a bit of a fall from grace you know, over the last while, I can see him rebuilding himself and getting back to the top and getting back into the hearts and minds of Irish people, because, you know, he was considered a national treasure until all this kind of madness kind of happened. But I think he'll come back from his personal kind of issues, whatever it is, it's his kids, and get back to the top.
Of course, to a degree, you'll always be linked to him because he walked you out prior to your pro debut in March of 2017, yeah, and had that great moment with the media when he was yelling at everyone saying that he was going to beat Floyd Mayweather. That's kind of how the whole thing, you know, really kicked off. I'm wondering, do you still have a relationship with him? Do you still talk to him?
He started the Mayweather fight.
Yeah.
But we don't really, I don't really chat to him, but I'm probably dropping the odd message the odd time. You know, life gets in the way. I'm continuing on with my career. Connor's got his own stuff going on with his drink and stuff, but no, I wouldn't be in contact much, but you know, the odd time I drop a message.
And by the way, I have to ask you about this. I noticed on your Instagram, you're a big fan of Chris Eubank. I love Chris, yep, Eubank. I could listen to that man speak 24 hours a day. What do you love so much about Chris Eubank? And yeah, have you ever had the opportunity to actually express your appreciation for him in person? Have you ever met him?
No, but I'm actually here. Part of my team is his nephew, Harlan Eubank. He's part of my training team, and he's over here at the minute. But I have this friend, Chris Eubank, as a fascinating character. Everything he does, anything he does, I listen with intent. I just think he's hilarious. He doesn't mean to be funny, but he's funny. I've even got a Christmas jumper for my Christmas night next week or something with Chris Eubank on it. So I love the guy. He's brilliant.
I love him too. That voice is unbelievable. And the way he spoke about Mayweather and McGregor, I mean, didn't really work out the way he was kind of painting the picture, but it was just so, I mean, it was an out-of-body experience meeting him and listening to him speak for the first time in person back in Vegas 2 years ago. Mick, this has been a pleasure, and I wish you the best, my man. What a great story, and I'm happy that you're getting the opportunity to right that wrong on Saturday on ESPN at the world's most famous arena. It's an amazing story. I can't wait to watch, and I appreciate you doing this for a few minutes here today.
Thanks for having me, as always, and great to speak to you again, my friend, and hope to see you soon. Take care.
Absolutely. There he is, the pride of Northern Ireland, Belfast to be exact, Mick Conlon, competing on the card this Saturday, Madison Square Garden. It's going down at the same time as UFC 245. Like I said, if you're at home, I hope that you have two televisions, or at least your phone, computer, and TV, because this card is great. I love boxing. I said this before, and I don't talk about it as much as maybe pro wrestling and, of course, MMA. Pro wrestling, much to the chagrin of TST, who's told me to cool it on the pro wrestling talk, but I will never cool it on the pro wrestling talk, ever, when appropriate. But boxing is doing great these days, and I get so mad when people say, oh, boxing's dead, or there are no stars, or it's not as interesting as it once was, or MMA killed boxing. False, 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 and false. Boxing is having a great year. Boxing is very healthy. Last weekend was great. I loved the fight. Joshua Ruiz, too, amazing. Great theater. Wilder a couple weeks ago. Fury doing great. And we're just talking about the heavyweights. Terrence Crawford. Hopefully Errol Spence comes back healthy. Lomachenko. Canelo. Ridiculous decision to delay the card, or that fight, because of 244, Triple G. List goes on. It's a great time for boxing. This card is great on Saturday. No one's telling me to say this. No one's telling me to promote this. But I hope that you're watching both. If you're a combat sports fan, watch Terrence Crawford fight. He's kind of their version of Demetrius Johnson. Top pound-for-pound fighter. Doesn't get the love. Doesn't get the shine. Doesn't get the buzz. Doesn't talk smack. And there's politics. It's a different structure. We won't get into all of that. But, like, he can't get the fights with that promoter's guy and that guy, blah, blah, blah. But he's a tremendous fighter. Top 2 pound for pound, in my opinion. Whatever that means. Lomachenko probably number one. Crawford number two. He's fighting. Mick Conlon's fighting in the rematch. It's a trilogy fight, really. But he's 0-0 for two. And then, of course, there's Teofimo Lopez, who I mentioned earlier, who's a great up-and-comer as well. So I'm looking forward to that. That's a great card. Saturday, Madison Square Garden, going on at the same time as 245. And by the way, it's right after the Heisman Trophy presentation, so they're going to get a huge, huge rating. UFC prelims are going to be on ESPN2 they'll be on ESPN. So hopefully you have a way of watching both. My radio show, by the way, is going to be on in the midst of all that, 5 to 7, so a little bit before, 5 to 7 Eastern will be on ESPN Radio. We'll also have a pre-show with Chael before the card as well, and the road show on Friday. I got a lot going on. I'm a very busy man in Las Vegas. I'm looking forward to getting there. Like I said, it's been 5 months, and the Vegas cards are a little special, a little more special. One man who knows a lot of things about Vegas, they call him Mr. Vegas, actually. Long before he was an MMA reporter, he was really the king of Vegas. I mean, he ran that town. He would go. I actually think, as my voice reaches a very high pitch, I actually think he had an apartment in Vegas just as a sort of getaway. Am I revealing too much, Mark Raimondi? Is that accurate or inaccurate?
That's like half accurate.
Okay.
It's a half truth, Ariel.
Do you want to expand on it or just leave it at that?
Nope. That's all I got for you.
All right. Maybe I revealed too much. In any event, you are in Las Vegas right now for UFC 245, and you're causing all kinds of drama. In fact,
what?
Yes, because I was just talking on this program to Dan Lambert, the founder of ATT, the owner of ATT, the man who started it all. And in the midst of this conversation, Dustin Poirier is going on like a tweet-a-thon about Colby Covington and all this stuff. You were in Florida with Colby Covington. Your story's out right now on ESPN.com. It's a great look at how he reinvented his career and, of course, the drama as well at ATT these days with Poirier and Masvidal in particular. I want to ask you about this experience because this is something a lot of people don't get to actually see and experience for themselves. What was it like actually being with Colby away from the cameras, away from the spotlight, all the shine in Florida in his element for those couple days?
It's interesting. He's certainly a different guy when you just get him one-on-one. And you know this too, Ariel. He's actually very polite. And, he's open with his time and he's very willing to accommodate. He's very accommodating. And I went to get lunch with him at a nearby Whole Foods. And, the guy that made our sandwiches and wraps, I guess Colby's been going there for 8 years, and then the guy behind the counter was like, you know, Colby's a great guy. You know, I watch him on TV, but when he's in here, he's like, he's very polite and nice. So it was an interesting contrast to the, you know, the MAGA hat wearing, trash talking Colby in front of the microphone.
Did he change your stance on him at all?
I've always been objective when it comes to Colby. I've always kind of understood what he's doing, because I'm a big pro wrestling fan, and I have been my whole life, and I've followed that art closely, and I cover it now for ESPN a little bit, and I've understood from the jump what he was trying to do. And you know, I sat down with Dan Lambert in his home in Fort Lauderdale in a room with one of the most extensive pro wrestling championship belt collections in the world. And we had a nice, you know, 40, 50 minute long chat about Colby and about, you know, what he has done to really, he felt, save his job initially. And then now to try to make as much money as possible. He's tried to monetize this character. Now is he that guy in real life? And I'll tell you what Dan Lambert told me. He said, yeah, there are parts of him that are like that. But there are parts of him that are also very nice and very polite and a good guy to the people who are close to him. But yeah, so I guess it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but it was very interesting. And I do appreciate that access. And I thought, you know, I tried to tell the most fair, balanced story as I could about what was going on down there.
Colby's relationship with Dana White isn't great these days, to put it mildly. And,
yeah,
and the negotiations to make this fight, remember, they were supposed to do it at Madison Square Garden. That fell through, and it led to the bigger fight, Masvidal-Diaz. But considering all that he has said about Dana, and we recall, you know, the video he recorded him in his private time and the stuff that he's saying about, like, slapping him with the belts and all that stuff, is there a chance in your mind that if he loses this fight that they cut him?
Oh wow! You know what? I hadn't even considered that. I would still say no. I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I still feel like he's valuable. I mean, to the UFC, I really do. I mean, I'm sure you can make the argument that he can be more trouble than he is worth at times. But I also think that, he's a guy that can headline pay-per-views, and he's doing it on Saturday on a card with three title fights. So I'll never say never, and I'll never say that I'm completely surprised by certain decisions made by the UFC. That would somewhat be strange to me if they did that, because again, I mean, Dana White has had issues with fighters in the past, with the Tito Ortizes of the world, the Rampage Jacksons of the world. Is this different? I don't know. I really don't know. I guess we'll find out what happens, but yeah, cutting him, that seems like it might be a bit extreme. I could see him, you know, never getting another title shot, you know, and getting extremely tough fights from here on out,
but
I don't know about cutting him.
Yeah, I mean, he is a draw. I think he's the biggest draw on this card, and we're about to find out just how big of a draw he is because he's headlining his first pay-per-view. But I think of all the fighters involved in those three title fights, he's the one that has gotten people the most sort of emotionally charged, good or bad. You saw that scene in New York City last month. It was insane. It was like a pro wrestling event, like people chanting, the book, all that stuff. I mean, it's fun to watch him perform, whether you like it or not, and I'm curious to see how the rest of the week goes, because I'm told that he is cooperating but isn't happy about a few things, and so I'm curious if he has any more tricks up his sleeve as far as the promotion for this particular fight is concerned. One last thing on the
Colby's. We'll have a live mic Wednesday afternoon.
That's
so we'll
see. One last thing on this. Are you surprised that nothing has happened at the gym with him and Masvidal, with him and any of the other fighters? And maybe have things – did you hear that something happened and we're just not being told about it?
Nothing physical. There have been verbal altercations. There have been – I mean, Colby said that there are several fighters who have screamed at him from across the gym or maybe not even across the gym, from close up. One of those people was Jorge Masvidal. I think you know that. I think that both of them kind of spoke about that on your show back in October or September. Joanna Jędrzejczyk also apparently had some words for Colby Covington during her camp for the Michelle Waterson fight that was in UFC Tampa back in October. So, there have been, but nothing physical, and Dan Lambert and the coaches there, and I've spoken to a lot of people there, they're pretty confident that nothing physical will happen. And I spoke to Jorge Masvidal, and he said that he will not fight Colby Covington in the gym out of respect for American Top Team. You know, Masvidal has been at that gym for 15 years. He has nothing but respect for Dan Lambert, for the coaches there, for the team. And as much as he dislikes Colby Covington, he's not going to cross that line. He's a man with a code, you know, and he's that kind of guy. Now, Dustin Poirier, I reached out to him for the story. Didn't seem to be too keen on talking to me. Had some expletives that I can't say here on a family show for Colby Covington when I reached out to Dustin. I guess he's tweeting about it now. I saw one of them before I got on with you. But I can't speak for Dustin Poirier. I don't know what he has planned for Colby Covington. But it seems like so far there hasn't been any kind of physical altercations, and I don't think there, at least according to the coaches there and the people there, I don't think there will be.
Okay, let's put 245 on ice for just a second. I want to ask you about three other big stories going on right now in the sport. The first one, the release of Liz Carmouche. The timing, the release itself, the fact that they did it while she was doing promotional work, the fact that they did it 4 months after her last fight, which happened to be for the UFC belt, the fact that they're saying that it's just because, I mean, like, there is a precedent with releasing someone who is just kind of getting in the way, who's really good, but is no longer promotable. John Fitch, Jake Shields, Yushin Okami comes to mind. But the fact that it happened 4 months after her last fight and she was willing and able to fight, the fact that it happened while she's out doing promotional work in D.C., meeting with veterans, children who are at the children's hospital there, the way this was all handled, what did you make of it?
It was curious. It was really interesting to see what happened. And I don't really know why. And I wish the UFC was more responsive to questions about stuff like this, because I think it would be in their best interest to kind of explain exactly what happened. Because they go through periods of the year where they do release fighters, and sometimes they're veteran fighters who maybe are making a little bit higher of a purse than some of the younger fighters on the roster. And maybe that was the case here, and it was just that, you know, that time to cut some salaries, and they did that. But It is a curious time. It's before the holidays. She was in Washington, D.C. You know, the UFC had no problem putting her on social media, meeting with military. She's obviously, you know, a former Marine. You know, she was meeting with troops down there, and she was going to hospitals and meeting with children and you know, people struggling with cancer. So they had no problem kind of, you know, I don't want to say using her, but they had no problem, you know, putting her out there and doing charity work and promotional work and posting photos of her on social media. And then, I mean, really in that same amount of time, you know, she's in actuality, she's getting cut from the promotion. I mean, it's clear that the UFC is a big company and the, you know, the left hand is not always talking to the right hand, which is kind of understandable in big companies. It happens, but it did seem like odd timing, especially like you said, so far after her last fight when, you know, they could, if they really were going to cut her, they could have cut her in September or
right.
October.
Right. And let's be honest, she's not the biggest draw. She's not selling tickets. She's mm-hmm. not a television draw. I get all of that. But to do it 4 months later when she says that she was turning down grappling opportunities, to do it while she's, you know, out doing PR and promotional work, community work for the company is just, I mean, that's a PR disaster. That's the left mm-hmm. hand not talking to the right hand, in my opinion. The matchmakers, the people who make those decisions are not talking to the people who are actually setting up these community things. And on top of that, after it came out and after it became a PR nightmare, the fact that no one called her an executive, you know who I'm talking about, Dana White, Hunter Campbell, Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, the fact that none of these people reached out to her, a pioneer, someone who was involved in the very first female fight in UFC history, by all accounts, has been a company woman, has never turned down a fight, has always showed up. No one even reached out to explain, considering how it all went down, to me is indefensible. And you're right. The fact that they don't explain why they did this, the fact that I reached out, I tried to get an explanation, I didn't get anything back. The fact that they don't do it only leads to us, you know, going with her side of the story. There's no other explanation to talk about because they won't do it. And there's no accountability there. So I think it was very disappointing. Now, let me ask you about Jairzinho Rozenstruik.
Mm-hmm.
What a year. 4-0. Four finishes. No one's ever done that before in modern UFC history, regardless of weight class. Beats Overeem with seconds remaining and splits him open. And afterwards continues to call Francis Ngannou. Is this the fight that you want to see for both men next?
If you're telling me that's the next fight, I'm not going to have any complaints about it. I think Francis Ngannou is right there for a title shot, but I know that there is a roadblock in his way right now in the form of that trilogy bout between Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier. So if Francis Ngannou wants to fight before a title shot, and we know that Jairzinho Rozenstruik wants to fight him, look, I'm 100% down for that fight. That was one of the craziest finishes in UFC history, because not only was it in the final seconds of a 5-round fight, main event fight, it was, as devastating of a punch that late in a fight that you could possibly imagine. I mean, Overeem's lip exploded on impact. Mm. It literally exploded. It tore in half on impact in the final seconds. I mean, that's the kind of power that Rozenstruik has. It's completely mind-boggling.
I love that fight. I love the story of Jairzinho Rozenstruik. I love the footage of him coming home to Suriname mm-hmm. on Monday night and being treated like a megastar, like the Beatles just landed in New York. I mean, it's just a great story. And to have a guy call out Francis, no one calls out Francis. No one actively campaigns to fight Francis Ngannou. And I know he's frustrated and he deserves better. And he hasn't fought since June. And his two fights combined haven't lasted more than a minute and 45 seconds. But here's a guy who's actually saying, hey, I'll fight you. And if Overeem had won, if it went the distance, Overeem wins via the scorecards, that would have been a disaster for Francis. He already knocked out Overeem in a vicious, vicious KO. I mean, like, there would be no interest in that rematch. He's talking about Volkov. Like, no one wants to see that fight. Fight the guy who's 4-0 this year, who's on fire. There's a great story there. He's calling him out. I love that fight. I'm all in. I hope we see it sooner rather than later. Last one. How do you feel about the Frankie Edgar move to not do the Sanhagen fight, at least for now? I'm going to say it's not going to happen. I know they're saying that it is. They're promoting both of them. But to think that he's going to return a month later after fighting a guy like Korean Zombie, crazier things have happened. He knocks him out in 10 seconds. All right. But right now, it's in jeopardy because he's taking this fight against Zombie next weekend. And Ortega gets injured. He says, all right, chill on the Sanhagen fight. I'll go back to 145 after I decided to go down to 135. So now Sanhagen may not get that big opportunity. And now you don't get the story of Edgar reinventing his career at 135 for this one last title run. How do you feel about this decision?
It seems like a strange move, right? I don't really see what's in it for Frankie Edgar, aside from
money.
Maybe a main event fight night payday.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that is. I mean, I guess that's out there for him, but you know, he has to go during the holiday season across to the other side of the world, to South Korea, and fight Chan Sung Jung, you know, one of the scariest, most dangerous guys in the 145 pound division on his home soil. It seems like a tough proposition for Frankie Edgar, for someone who had already decided to go down to 135, who already had a fight booked, who had a fight booked against a top up and comer that, you know, if he beats Corey Sandhagen, then you start talking about Frankie Edgar in the conversation for maybe not a title shot right away at 135, but he's Frankie Edgar. He's going to be right up there. He's going to be in the conversation. So I don't even know what a win over Chan Sung Jung really does for Edgar. If he does beat him, of course, it's a big win. Korean Zombie is a great fighter. He's a top 145er, but we've already seen Edgar against Max Holloway. We already know what happens in that fight. I don't see him getting a rematch anytime soon. Does it up his stock if he goes down to 135 after that? Maybe, but it just seems like odd timing. Unless they're giving Frankie a bag of money, maybe they are, to go to Busan and fight Korean Zombie. It does seem kind of strange.
Okay, one last one. I lied. Three title fights on Saturday. Yeah. Three title fights. All I want to know is there going to be at least one title change?
At least one title change.
You don't have to tell me who. I just want to know if there's going to be one.
Yes. Yes.
One,
there will be a title
two?
Change on
two?
Saturday.
Are you going to say two?
I'm going to say there's going to be one title change on Saturday night
at
T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada.
I look forward to seeing you there, Mark. Perhaps you'll make an appearance at the roadshow on Friday.
I'll be there.
Okay. Wow.
You know, Ariel, yes. there's a pro wrestling show in Las Vegas that night.
Okay.
And I've chosen to go to the Helwani Roadshow
rather than the pro wrestling event. What time is the wrestling event at?
I think it's at 8 o'clock.
You could do both. My show's at 7.
Yeah, but, you know, 7 o'clock.
I appreciate the gesture.
Want to hang out.
All right.
Want to stand in a long line to shake your hand.
I appreciate that.
You know.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, the first one was a big success because you were there. So I think the second one would fall a little flat if you weren't. So I appreciate you doing that.
Anytime.
All right. I'll see you in Vegas. There he is, Mark Raimondi of ESPN. Check out his article out today on Colby Covington and all the drama at ATT and all that stuff and more. By the way, I want to give a shout out to my good pal, Anthony Yerardi, who actually won two tickets following my appearance on ESPN Radio 1100 in Las Vegas this morning. He was, I think, the 25th caller, won two tickets to the show on Friday. I said I'd give him a shout out. I'll do it here. I'll also do it on Friday. But thank you very much to him. And thanks to everyone who have purchased tickets to the events. Again, it's this Friday at the Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club in Las Vegas, Link Promenade, right next to Caesars, 7 o'clock, done by 8:30-ish. We'll do the trivia challenge with Ioane Andrzejczyk, Dominic Reyes, Derek Lewis, and Michael Chiesa, Q&A afterwards, giveaways, meet and greets, all that stuff and more. There's a lot. And by the way, it's a huge weekend. I know everyone's excited about Conor's return on January 18th, and rightfully so. By the way, isn't it weird that they haven't officially put out a poster or a ticket sale date or anything like that about that fight? Weird, right? A lot of people have been asking me about press conference. Right now I heard they've changed it. It's not going to be a Q1 seasonal press conference. It's just going to be a press conference for the February 8th card in Houston. Now I know we're really close to January 18th, so the idea of Conor coming to Vegas and Cerrone, I mean, maybe it's asking a lot, but it does seem like it's awfully hush-hush. Like there's been no official announcement, if you will. Just saying, just throwing it out there. So yeah, it's been changed to just Jones and Reyes, Shevchenko, Chookagian. But if you're going to Vegas, there's a lot to do. Quintet on Thursday. They're not asking me to plug them, but hey, I'll be a nice guy and plug them. It's UFC, WEC, Strikeforce, Pride. UFC versus WEC versus Strikeforce versus Pride. This is the Kazushi Sakuraba grappling event, if you will, which my good pal Ant Evans kind of created. These are the rosters. It's pretty amazing. Team UFC, Anthony Smith, Rumble Johnson, Sean O'Malley, Gilbert Burns, Clay Guida. Team WEC, Chad Mendez, Cub Swanson, Glover Teixeira, Mark Munoz, James Krause. Team Pride, Kazushi Sakuraba, Takanori Gomi, Gregor Gracie, Hector Lombard, Eve Edwards. Team Strikeforce, Gilbert Melendez, Jake Shields, King Mo, Jay-Z Cavalcante, and Babalu Sobral. These are big names. These are really big names. So that's on Thursday. If you're in town, I suggest checking that out, Quintet Ultra. Friday, you've got the weigh-ins. You've got that press conference I just mentioned and my show at 7 p.m. And Saturday, you have 2:45. If you're going to Vegas, you've got a lot to do. And by the way, I got my radio show. If you're in your car or at home just chilling, 5 to 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio, the 2:45 pre-show. So there's a lot going on. I'm excited to get out there. And most excited because my good friend, the brains behind this operation, producer extraordinaire, TST, will be making his Vegas debut. Is that right, TST?
Vegas debut.
Wow.
Me and Mark, we're going to hit it up. We're going to tear the town up. You introduced him as the Vegas man, so I can't wait to rack his brain.
Are you nervous? Are you excited? Are you anxious?
No, I'm not anxious. I mean, listen, I don't get anxious like you. You're the most anxious person I've ever met.
Absolutely.
I'm very excited. I can't wait for the fights, for press conferences, for the road show. It'll be a blast.
Colby,
my guy, yes.
Unbelievable. Are you ready? Are you packed?
I hope I get to meet him.
By the way, a minimalist, does he pack anything when he goes on a trip like this?
A minimalist just brings a backpack, brings
are you serious?
A couple clothes, and that's it. Yeah, that's all I'm bringing.
A backpack.
That's it.
Wow. So you're just going to wear the same thing the whole time?
I'll have like two outfits, then maybe some sleeping clothes and some workout clothes, and that'll be it.
Look at you. Unbelievable. Well, that's a good segue for everyone's favorite segment of the week.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Okay, Ariel. So, over the past few weeks, let's do a quick review. So,
please.
I've talked about asking yourself more questions about the 90-90 rule for when you're determined to get rid of things, about getting rid of stuff, people that no longer serve a purpose. So, if you have been following along and you have taken my advice, and if you've eliminated distractions as well, you might find yourself with some free time. Now that you've got some free time, you need to start trying to find out, you know, what are my values? What do I stand for? What kind of person am I? We really don't do these kind of inward processes all the time where we, you know, have to try to find out who we are, do that deep digging, because we're always so busy, always so on the go. We've got so much stuff, so many distractions all the time. So when I decided to truly convert to minimalism, I was like, you know, who am I? Like, what do I stand? What do I like to do? And so I kind of narrowed down my values and I determined that I really just love in my free time doing the things that I like to do. And that's being outside. That is being active. That is listening to podcasts. That is being with my friends. That's calling my friends, family on the phone, writing letters. I love sending mail and doing things like that. And I do things like that. I love exploring and traveling. That's why I'm pumped to Vegas to go check out some new spots. And I'm always going somewhere. I'm always doing something fun. I'm always down for an adventure. And those are the things that I determined that I love to do when I finally got that free time. My life has been so much better, my quality of life outside of work and all of those things ever since I became a minimalist.
Wow. And by the way, have we ever established when, in fact, you became a minimalist and why you became one? Like, what was the turning point in your life?
So I started considering minimalism in late 2016. I had both a friend and an ex-girlfriend recommend a documentary to me about minimalism, and I take recommendations very seriously from people that I trust, and I watched that film, and it has been the single most impactful work of art, literature, theater that has ever impacted my life.
Wow. Do you mind telling us the name
of it? Yeah, it's on Netflix. It's called Minimalism.
Oh, wow.
A Meaningful Life.
Okay. Change your life.
No, Minimalism, a documentary about the important things.
Okay. This is back in 2016, so we're approaching 4 years.
Yes. Since I made the move.
And you were how old?
At that time, when I became a minimalist, I think I was 20.
20. Look at you now.
Yeah, almost 24, Ariel. You're going to wish me a happy birthday on December 31st?
I did not know.
Yeah, birthday is always a party.
New Year's Eve birthday. Wow. This explains so much.
There you go.
Well, I love it. I'm looking forward to seeing you there. And Troy, or I should say TST. Ugh, I just broke down the fourth wall. I just broke kayfabe. TST will be in attendance at the roadshow as well, including New York Rick. So we're going to have New York Rick and TST in attendance. If only Corporate Jake were there, all my lovers would be in the same spot.
Okay, yeah, great. Me, Mark, New York Rick and Colby all hanging out. I can't
Amazing.
Wait. All right, so we've got some reviews here, some people giving you some love. Great. Okay. Listen, 5 stars. I love me some Ari Hawani, and this comes from a person who didn't give us a name, just some emojis. I love me some Ari Hawani. I'm no Mark. I've been a fan for quite some time. I work outside all day, so I listen to podcasts and music all day. Hmm. Both of Ariel's shows are a great listen. I recommend it to any old school fan, new school fan, lover, or hater. You are guaranteed in getting the best guests and MMA news. I enjoy TST as well.
Hmm.
Even when I think I'm going to be disappointed, which isn't often, I'm far from it. Keep up the great work. It's appreciated.
Wow. That's very nice.
I'm glad we're not disappointing you.
Yeah, I'd like to thank this individual, but he didn't give us a name. Or she.
Next review comes from Team Dishari, and this one is titled TST. It is 5 stars, and this is a great follow-up to what I was just talking about recommendations. So, addressed to me, hey, bud, I remember hearing about you checking out places and trying different beers. One of my passions is craft beer.
Oh.
We have a place in Las Vegas called Parkway Tavern. They have over 250 beers. It's off the strip, so you also get a little taste of the local population as opposed to our tourist atmosphere. You guys are doing an amazing job. Happy holidays.
Wow. Look at that.
Ari, you want to go grab a beer at Parkway Tavern?
Absolutely not. I don't drink beer. But,
come on.
I'm wondering if you're going to go.
Oh, I'm definitely going to go. I was going to invite you. I was maybe even going to, you know, buy you a beer.
No, not my thing. Also, I got a lot of work to do. I don't have time to dilly-dally with your bar hopping.
Oh, I'm going
like
just
that.
For fun.
Yeah. But let me know how it goes. Give us a review next week.
I will do that.
All right. Well, I think we've reached the end. This particular episode has flown by, if I do say so myself. And there's a lot to be excited about, my friends. Maybe that's why it's flying by with UFC 245, the final UFC pay-per-view of the decade. Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, welterweight title, Max Holloway, Alexander Volkanovski. We spoke to Alexander on Monday's show. Check that out. It's on the feed. Check us out. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the app, all those places and more. Amanda Nunes, spoke to her too. Jermaine Durandamy. I'll be at Media Day tomorrow, so we'll hopefully talk to more people. Jose Aldo, fighting at 135. Have you seen the photos? Have you seen the photos? Going up against Marlon Moraes. And what about Uriah Faber against Petr Yan? Little mini 135 tournament. What about Mike Perry against Jeff Neal? Mike Perry, 4 months ago, had his nose rearranged. He's back already? Crazy. Matt Brown, Ben Saunders, that should be fun. Kai Car France, looking forward to that one. Puna Soriano of Contender Series fame. Jessica Eye returning. There's a lot to like. It kicks off 6:15 on ESPN Plus. That's Eastern. And it's in the midst of my radio show, so you can watch and listen at the same time. And then prelims on ESPN2 at 8 Eastern. And, of course, pay-per-view on ESPN Plus at 10 p.m. Eastern. I'm off to Las Vegas. Thanks, as always, for listening, subscribing, downloading, rating, all those things and more. I love you all. We'll talk to you out there. Enjoy the fights. And, of course, next week we'll be back, same time and place.